Hello, everybody. This is Patricia Peterson, Conversation with Your Chinese Auntie podcast. And today I'm joined by my lovely husband, Kimon Peterson, who hosts Conversations with Kimon. And we've had a few requests to talk about our relationship, our marriage, and we will see also what topics come up.
One of the teachers I took couples counseling training with, he said that couples lie. I don't agree with that because I think what is more true is that we each have our version of what happens because of our life experiences and what we perceive to be true. You'll hear that in this podcast when we both talked about how I found my place after my ex and I broke up, and we remember different things. The important thing is to remember, I think, in relationship is no relationship is perfect. Our marriage is not perfect, but we work on it. Relationships are hard. You need to work on it. You need to be there for your partner. And you need to show up as your truest self so you can hold space for your partner. Kimon said something really true in this episode is that when you enter a relationship, give up everything you know about relationships, everything you think you know, because the person standing in front of you might not meet all that those expectations. Also, your partner cannot be the end and be all for you. It's a lot of pressure to put on somebody. They can be the rock for some things, but you should not expect partner to be there for you for everything. This is why we have community. This is why we have friends. This is why we have therapists. We need to seek support from other people besides our spouse, our partner. Now, in this episode, fair warning, the topic of suicide comes up, childhood abuse, and unhealthy marriages. We don't go into much details, but I do want to name those topics here. I hope you enjoy this conversation between Kimon and I, and stay till at the end for advice from your Chinese auntie.
So we're going to start off with how we met, and Kimon's going to go first.
Yay! So I'm going to go back a little bit before I met Patricia. And I was in probably a transitional period of my life. And I'd gone to this 10-day Vipassana silent meditation retreat. And I realized this was a way to fulfill a few fundamental important things in my life. One was to make a difference in the world, and two was to help people. So I decided that I was going to give up everything and become a monk, which seems interesting. The first thing I had to do was start to get healthy. And at the time I was, this, like I said, this was a bit before I'd met Patricia. So I was actually a smoker at the time. So the first thing I did was quit smoking. And I was already a little bit overweight. So when I quit smoking, food got really tasty. So I got even heavier. And in the end, I had a manual with springs and such like that went up to 290 pounds. And when I stepped on it, the pin went past 290 and there was a stop pin about 3 inches past 290 and it would hit that. So I was over 300 pounds and I realized I needed to do something about this because if you want to become a monk, you're going to have to take care of your financial well-being, your health. There's a lot of things you need to do in order to be in the right place to be that. So I talked to a friend of mine about going to hot yoga because I thought, well, I tried it once before and it was pretty intense workout. And I thought, maybe it would help. So we talked back and forth and finally they agreed that we would go to a place called Yaletown Yoga in downtown Vancouver. So the first day I went down there, we got in the doors and I think they said it was like $16 for one session, or we could pay $20 for a full week of unlimited. There was a 30-day challenge going on where you do a 90-minute hot yoga class every day for 30 days. And I was like, ooh, can I decide after? In that class, it was pretty rough because I did not like what I was looking like. I could not look at myself in the mirror. And by the end of that class, I knew the only choice for me was to do a 30-day challenge. So I signed up and basically built my life around doing hot yoga classes. And I made it to the 30 days. And at the end of 30 days, the scale was at 290. So I'd lost a substantial amount of weight. So I decided to keep on going. And I think in the end, I went to 96 days and my weight was down to 260 by then. And I'm not sure exactly when it happened, but somewhere in the middle of that, like 96 days, I came in and I sat down and there was this new person sitting at the desk. And we just struck up this conversation and she was funny and cute and fun and like engaged. And something in me said, oh my God. And I never believed in like knowing the first time you met somebody, that would be a possibility. I didn't think that was real, but something in me said, yeah, I could spend the rest of my life with that person. And then somewhere in the conversation, it turns out she was engaged. And that same little process in my head that said I could spend the rest of my life with that person also said, that's okay. The plan is to be a monk anyway. So just need this person in my life and we'll let them define what that means. And we became friends. And I remember my friend I brought to yoga one time, Patricia and I were goofing around. My friend just berated me like, you shouldn't be flirting with her. She's engaged. I'm like, I'm not flirting. And she's like, you should be here flirting. I'm like, well, I guess that's right. I guess I was maybe. So we became friends. And after a period of time, and I can't remember how long it was probably a year and a bit, their relationship broke up. My understanding is Patricia was out looking for a place to live. And the story I always tell is she was walking up around the area where I lived at the time, probably because her Chinese medicine school and the Starbucks she worked at was at the corner of Broadway and Granville. And the story I always say is she came around the corner and there was somebody bringing a for lease sign out. And she said, oh, you got a place for lease? And said, yeah. He took her and showed her, and it was a reasonable deal, close enough to work. And basically, she moved a half block from where I lived at the time, or it was a block and a half. I can't remember exactly. And I helped her move. Then I say I waited a full year. And the reason I waited a full year, because the last thing is I don't want to be a rebound. If it was going to be, I'm going to be a monk and this person's going to be a friend for my rest of life, or I'm going to go all in and we're going to be together and I'm not going to be a monk. So she either prevented me or saved me. I haven't quite figured that out sometimes. Like I said, I waited a whole year. She says 11 months. And I still remember the same friend that I went to yoga with that one time. We're driving back from a painting job because I had a painting company. And I told them I was going to ask Patricia out. And she says, woo, you sure? Because you're a friend. Yeah, I'm like, yeah, yeah. But what I really needed some advice, because I'm really not good at this stuff. I'm not the guy. I'm not the guy with lines. I'm not the guy with the right thing to say. I don't get that stuff. He says, well, I mean, the only advice I can give you is, first off, you have to make a plan, know the day, know the time, when you're going to pick them up. You have to have that all firm before you call. And then, because you guys are friends, you have to make it very clear that you're asking them out on a date. Because otherwise, you're kind of, I don't know, I'm not saying you're being slimy, but you're being a little underhanded. You can't pretend it's a date if everybody doesn't know it's a date. So I literally called Patricia up and I said, I want to ask you out on a date. And she was like, whoa, 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 whoa. I don't know. We are friends. And it's like that little voice that told me when I first met her, I could live my life with this person. And also the voice that said, it doesn't matter. This person needs to be in your life. And let her decide to define what that means. That voice came out and just said, I just did. Say, I just did. Now, all I said was, I just did. I just crossed that line. And Patricia says, well, can I think about it? And like, yeah. Now, I wonder if we should pause here and hear Patricia's side, and then we can move forward from there. What do you think?
Well, that sounds good. I don't think it was 11 months. You waited 6 months and then you started dropping hints. Because my ex-fiance broke up with me in December, but we're still in Chinese medicine school. And we were still hanging out with friends. And then you started dropping hints in the summertime. But I knew I didn't want to date you because you were also at that stage figuring out probably the last bits of your depression. And when my ex broke up with me, another friend of ours said to me, you need to figure out what you want in a partner. And what you want cannot be what your past relationships, the guy didn't have. Really write down what you want. I did in that December when my ex and I broke up. When you started dropping hints in the summertime, I talked to one of our other friends who was also an acupuncturist. And I was like, I think he's interested. What do I do? I don't want to cross the line. She also had a hand in helping us get together. But to go back to the beginning, so we met in 2004, which is when I came back from yoga teacher training. Hey, now, then we were friends for a while before you asked me out. So that's my understanding of it. And the place I found after my ex and I broke up, I actually remembered I was sitting. It was during my break when I was working at Starbucks. I was looking through the ads, the classified ads. So this was years ago. This was before Craigslist. Maybe not before Craigslist, but this was when people were still putting ads for rent in the newspaper. And I was looking at it and they had a place for rent and I called them. And you always say to me, things always work out when it's meant to be. I went to see the place. It was a small place, but it was perfect. It was 10 minutes walk from school and from work. And the building manager gave it to me, even though there was a guy who saw it at the same time, because I was single. He didn't want to rent it to a couple. So that's how I got the place. That's my version.
Yeah, when you came over to my place once and you set up the relationship corner and sat in it for a little while to see what it felt like, you told me about that later.
Okay, timeline-wise, December was when my ex and I broke up. You and I didn't start going out until November, but you started dropping hints in the summertime. Because you also started, at the meantime, you started online dating. What is it?
Yeah, it was like Plenty of Fish or something like that. The reason I went into it, because I really wanted to know if I wanted to be with you, or if I wanted to be with somebody. So I went on a few dates and oh my goodness, I found everything I didn't want. And I realized it wasn't just wanting to be with someone. It was wanting to be with you. It was like, I was still considering being a monk at the time.
Yeah, and when I went to your place, you told me that you were trying dating again. Even though we were friends, I think a part of me wanted to be with you, but was afraid. But then I wanted to help you because I also practice feng shui. So I helped you set up the romance corner in your place.
Yeah, and if I remember, it was make sure you have two places set at the table, have some mallard ducks in pairs. It was a certain crystal, and there had to be a comfy chair in that corner, and then you went and sat in that corner. And I didn't really get what you're doing there because I didn't know anything about, well, that kind of, I didn't know anything about feng shui at the time.
Yeah, it was mandarin ducks for those who's listening, and you want to attract romance into your life is mandarin ducks. And yeah, fast forward 18 years later.
Well, I mean, there's a lot between then and then. Some of the other stuff I remember when, I think it was pretty rough on you at one point. You were working and going to school and trying to teach yoga and you weren't making enough money. And I still remember one time you just broke down and cried and you just like, I just want to have a tea and a biscuit. And this thought came into my head. I'm like, show me your wallet. And you showed me your wallet and I took $20. I put it in there and you're like, well, I won't spend it. And I'm like, sure you will. I want you to know that there's abundance. I want you to understand there is abundance and there will always be abundance. So every day I'm going to go show me your wallet. And if it's, you don't have money, I'm going to put money in there. I want you to know that there's abundance, that you can buy a tea and a biscuit whenever you want. And I think that was about the time we decided that, hey, even though we're 4 months into a relationship, that we're old enough to know that we're not just playing. We're not dating around, that we can move in together. Was that about right?
I think we already moved in. It's because you and I started going out in November. We moved in March without telling my parents for like a few months. And then, it was because, so I am more of a visual person who remember things rather than words per se. So I remember you doing that with the money because I remember I woke up because I used to teach 6 a.m. and 9 a.m. yoga classes. And then I would either go to school and then work at Starbucks after, or on the days that I don't work at Starbucks, after I taught the 6 a.m. and the 9, I will go to school. And I remembered you, that was when you put the money in. Because I could remember our bed in that old place. And that was when you put the money in my wallet. Because I said to you, I wanted to have tea and breakfast or something like that in between the two classes, the 6 a.m. and 9 a.m. classes. And yeah, so we moved in pretty fast. We moved in 2005. And then we got married 2009.
We might have the dates off. I don't think we were together 4 years before we got married.
So we got together 2006.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
We moved in 2007.
Yeah.
We got married 2009.
Yep.
I think it would be interesting to talk about some of the challenges that we've had in the relationship and how we survive, because I think that's what people have asked in a sense, because also in my job as a therapist, one of the perception for a lot of the younger people, I think, is that relationship is easy. I often tell them, the relationship isn't necessarily easy, but you have to put in the work to communicate with each other, to talk to each other. And with social media nowadays, people often only post the good things about their relationship. They don't share the struggles they had. The things I remember in our relationship that were difficult. You going back to school, to massage therapy school, that was challenging and difficult. I think both of us are recovering avoidance. So we're pretty good at if one of us is really busy and focused on something, the other one can sort themselves out, can look after themselves in that we're not codependent. So when you went back to school, it was challenging financially, but also what I did was I joined the YWCA so I could go swimming. So that was something that filled my time. Fast forward a few years after that, I think one of the most challenging thing that really we had to work through in our relationship was when we opened our own business, our own clinic. On top of that, your brother died a few months later. And I had to look at my own beliefs about suicide. People would take their own life. So that kind of just got me onto my journey of internal healing and also made me realize I hadn't dealt with a lot of my childhood trauma at that time. So it all came out. That was a catalyst. And we also went to couples counseling for a few months. Because one thing that nobody tells you is when you open a business and you're working together, you see each other all the time. It can be really hard on the relationship. Since then, I've lost both parents. And then COVID hit. I did my master's. So there was a lot of stress. I truly believe couples counseling saved our relationship because I was depressed. I didn't know it after your brother died. And I realized I didn't deal with a lot of my childhood stuff. And couples counseling really gave me a different way to look at our relationship and knowing that you are not responsible for my happiness. Even though I tried to put it on you, but couples counseling made me realize that I cannot assume that you will make me happy because that is a lot of pressure. Yeah, so that's my version of some of the challenging times.
I actually think we had some challenges right out of the gate. And I remember one of the big ones was when we went out to dinner with my friends and I would just start eating first. And I'd never been told that that was a bad thing. And you get so upset and so angry. And it's like, I don't understand where that's coming from. And I remember one time I was like, I don't know what to do anymore because you were so upset. And I said, listen, I know you to be a very incredibly spiritual woman. Like a very deeply spiritual rooming. And right now you're coming from the ego and that's not who I know you to be. And it was really incredible. I've never like, this was one of those times where it was, I'm not the right person. Cause you stopped and you went, you're right. And I'm like, wow, that was amazing. I have never seen that before in my life. Never seen it. Anybody just to hear it.
Well, also to be fair, you know, when we talk about when I share that at that time, I haven't dealt with a lot of my childhood stuff and my upbringing, that has a lot to do with it, right? Because we, in relationship, we bring our upbringings, our lived experiences into a relationship. And if we have not looked at that, we haven't dealt with our beliefs, whether they are not that they're wrong about our beliefs, but when two people come together, things tend to clash. And I was single. I was never somebody who was in a relationship in and out, in and out. Before my ex and I got together, I was single for 4 or 5 years. Before you, my whole life I've only had, including you, like 4 partners. That's about it. So to be in a committed relationship with someone, you are the only partner who, at that time, because I was still so young, who had challenged me, who challenged me when I have things that I held on for dear life. And you're the only one that said, is it still serving? And sometimes I like to call it my Aries spiciness would stand firm and refuse to budge. Internal healing is such a long process. At that point, I mean, the first few years of our relationship, I have not looked at my stuff at all. And luckily, I always say to people, luckily, you're such a patient guy and nothing really bugs you. So that really helped in our relationship.
You just reminded me of one time. Yeah, like you said, we tended to butt heads a little bit. And one time you were like, you're so stubborn. And I'm like, you couldn't be with anybody half as stubborn with me as I am, or you'd walk all over them. Literally, I would rather have somebody who can stand in my face and say no than somebody who knuckles. Like, I would much rather have that. I mean, there is discomfort in somebody who's so strong-willed, tenacious, but there's also something really beautiful about it. Anyway, like I was saying, one thing I realized, so like Patricia said, she hadn't been in a relationship in a while. I'd only had a number of relationships myself, and I hadn't actually been in a serious relationship for, I want to say, getting close to like 18 years when Patricia and I got together. And so it was really different for me to be in a relationship. And one of the big things I learned, and I think if I'd given anybody advice about how to be in a relationship, the very first thing I would say is give up everything you think you know about relationship, everything you think you know about relationship. And that doesn't mean give up your deal breakers. Your deal breakers are important, infidelity, stuff like that. That's the deal breakers. You don't have to give up that. But give up all the other things you think you know about relationship and be in the relationship you're in. Because nothing causes upset more than expectation. And if somebody's expecting you to show up other than how you show up, it's not going to be a comfortable relationship. And the other thing, so give up everything you think you know about relationships, not your deal breakers, but just give up the stuff you think and be in the relationship you're in. And the other thing is, be related to the person you're in relationship with, not to who you wish they would be, or you would like them to be, or you would rather them be. You have to be related and in a relationship with who you're in a relationship with. Because if not, then you're in a relationship with some fictitious character and they'll never live up to it. Or maybe they can pretend for a while, but they'll never get there.
I will say this though. One of the best things you ever said to me, because I had abandonment issues. One time I said to you, in the beginning of our relationship, I said to you, you have to promise me you will never leave. And you said to me, I cannot promise you that. Because what if life happens, things happen? What if, you know, something happens to me? And then the other thing you also said to me was, the expectations you have on me to make you happy is a lot of pressure to put on someone else. And I say this to the couples I work with, even young people or individual clients I work with all the time, is that I truly believe that Disney, all those romance movies, all those romance books, have ruined the idea of romance and relationship for us. Because even look at the traditional wedding vows, it's like, you complete me. You are my everything. And I didn't recognize that until you brought that to me and said, think about how much pressure you are putting on the other person.
I'm so smart. I'm a smarty pants. I also said around abandonment issues, I also have abandonment issues. So if you leave, I'm going to follow you. You can't abandon me because I'm going to stalk you.
No, but I think you said that to help with my abandonment issue because I was so afraid. Which, and again, we talk about attachment styles, and for the listeners, you can read up on this. You can Google this. I was so avoidant because of my abandonment wound. And I was so afraid to let you in, even though we were already in a committed relationship. I had my shield up. I had my protection because I didn't want to be hurt. You figure out pretty early on that if you said that to me, that if you ever go anywhere, I will follow you, that actually helped my nervous system to settle. Because even though I had all these shields up to protect my heart, I wanted to be loved, which is one of the traits of people who are avoidant, right? We're so desperate to love, but we're also so afraid of opening ourselves up to others and being vulnerable. So when you say, you can't leave me, if you go anywhere, I will follow you. For me, a part of me was like, oh, okay, he's going to stick around. He's going to be there for me. And side note here, I often say, if you have a partner who say that to you and you're in your abusive relationships, that's not the same thing. But for you and I, at that time, we were committed to each other in a loving relationship. You saying that to me really helped me to go, oh, right. Okay. He's here. He's not going anywhere. And that helped me to slowly, and with therapy, open up to you and be able to trust that you are not going anywhere.
You picked up on my tactic. I can't remember for sure, but I think I also said that I might have told you once that in this relationship, I'm going to be 100% responsible for my own happiness, and I really need you to be the same. When the stress hit the wall in the big job and I left, and you nailed it on the head when you said, you need to figure this out. I can't figure this out for you, what I need to do. And at that moment, there was a small bit of anger about that. But there was this larger thing that I am responsible and I do need to figure this out. And not just like, not figure out like a duct tape solution. I need to figure this out.
Okay, but I think we need to backtrack a bit to talk about that part of your life. Long version short, that part of your life, you were hired to do this job. And on paper, it looked great, but it didn't in the end because the job just wasn't a good fit. It wasn't a great job. And then you were stressed out. You had heart palpitation. You ended up going to ER, to the emergency room. You were only in this job for 14 months, but leading up to it, you were not sleeping. You were in this job for 6 months. Leading up to it, you were not sleeping and it affected our relationship. And I remember standing next to you when you were in ER saying to you, you need to figure this out because our marriage will not survive this if you don't figure out what you need to do. And saying that doesn't mean that I wasn't going to support you, whatever you decide to do. But like what you said just now is, ultimately, we need to figure out what works for us with the support of our spouse. Now, again, one of the things with us is we don't have children, so we don't have to consider, like you change career, I change career. We don't have to consider the impact that would have if we have children. So then you took control, and I'll let you share that part of your story.
Going to backtrack a little bit to that job too, because it's funny. It's like, this is a part of who I am, something I learned really big about myself, that I was blaming myself for taking that job. And like, I was like, I should have been able to handle it. And there was all this stuff around that. And then I remember one of the last conversations I had with the director, and he just let it slip that, yeah, we knew we should have hired two people for this job. But for all that time, I was blaming myself, like that I should have been able to do it, which is interesting. I would say that one of my traits is I'm uber responsible to the point of blaming myself for a lot. I need to be able to do all this. Shows up in lots of areas of my life. It's not hugely detrimental usually, but sometimes it does cause me anxiety and stress.
Are there other things that stood out to you that was challenging and impactful for you?
I didn't really enjoy seeing you going through the problems with the placement you went through, but I don't know if you remember, I told you during that moment, I feel like I did a good job of supporting you and letting you know that this is going to work out. Like, you were really afraid. This is going to work out. It's going to work out better than you think it will. And in the end, you'll see the reason why. And see, that's the thing. Like, I mean, we've had challenges, but I always try in my whole life, I try to show up when somebody's having a tough time. I don't know if you'll agree, but in the majority of times when you're having a tough time, I show up in a big way.
You do. And I really think it would be really helpful for you to share how you're able to stay so centered and grounded when things are happening, especially to me, and I hold the space and go, it's okay, everything will be fine. Everything will work out the way it's supposed to be.
I mean, that's a lifelong question. That's not just a moment. But I'll go through the whole thing. Like, I don't know. Anyone listening out there, if you know an amazing human being in your life, somebody who really shows up, somebody who's really compassionate, caring, the most beautiful people you know have been through some really rough stuff. And they're not beautiful and amazing in spite of. They're beautiful and amazing because of. I spent a lifetime, and Patricia knows it, when it was like right up to before we met, I was dealing with depression. But what I was doing was I was unwinding a lifetime of stuff, of really tough stuff. And it wasn't like I got an inkling of this idea that people who go through hard things, they're the most compassionate and caring. Not in spite of it, but because of it. It's like going through tough things creates empathy and compassion. It can go both ways. Some people get angry and bitter and hate. And I was angry about things that happened in my life. But not only was I angry about them, I was angry about the fact that I was angry about them. And it wasn't until I decided to give myself an opportunity to like quit trying to not be mad and allow myself to be angry as I needed to be. And I remember I was rage driving up to Tofino on Vancouver Island, and I was going to give it to God. I was just like, I am so mad because I'm allowing myself to finally feel this anger. And I pull onto Long Beach and it's raining and I'm yelling and squaring at God and I'm pounding my feet on the ground. I'm like, why? What am I? And then clouds open up and some sun comes in and I fall to my knees. And it's funny, as I allowed myself to feel anger, I started to realize that, yeah, you know, okay, I do care about people. And when somebody's hurting, I know how it feels and I want to ease that suffering. I just like, I have to, I have no choice. This is why I'm here. And as I felt, as I experienced that anger more, after a while, the anger dissipated and the anger turned from anger to an acceptance. And as the acceptance came in, I was more and more compassionate, more and more caring, more and more like wanting to make a difference in the world. And at one point, I got to the point where I liked that part of myself. I didn't like what happened to me, the big thing that happened to me. I didn't like that situation. But what I liked was it, what it created. Because it's really good to be a caring person on this planet. And after a while, I loved that part of me. And I would never change it. And in fact, I'd go through it all 10 times harder if I knew I was coming to the same place. So that was like step one. Step two was when you, if you look back on your life, every single problem you've ever had in your life that's now in the past, not the problems that are still happening right now, every single problem you've ever had that's now in the past worked out better than you thought it was going to be in the moment that you were stuck in that problem and anxious and worried about the problem. So I learned to ask myself a question, one simple question, and I still ask it to this day. When I'm sitting in a problem, I ask, what's different between this problem and every other problem I've always experienced every time in my whole life? And there's no difference. There will be a solution. The solution will be better than I expect. And that brings some comfort in. I start looking back. And this is easier to do in retrospect. It's not easy to do when you're sitting in a moment. And I noticed how every time a door closed, something else opened. I noticed how every time something fell apart, something better came along. Like every job I went through, it just kept on getting better and better and better and better. And when things are going in a direction like that, I can't see them not continuing. And I've come to this belief that we are always, like, I used to wonder if I was in the right place or not, or if I should be or shouldn't be. And this is another way I live my life every day, is that I know for a fact the one truth about my life is I am always exactly where I need to be. Exactly when I need to be there, because if I didn't need to be there, I wouldn't. And if it ever comes a time that I no longer need to be in a situation, place, or thing, I won't. But I know it will move to something better. And it's a constant. And the only problem with all that stuff is if you can't get that and you can't hold on to that, the moment is really hard. And going through the path is really hard. But if you can understand that these things are true, that all problems will have a solution, then when you're in the moment, you can breathe a bit and you can relax. And, you know, this will work out. And literally, sometimes I sit in this head and I have a conversation with myself. I don't allow the thought process. I call it the ego, the sense of identity. Beautiful thing, right? If I can digress again. Can I digress? Okay. I honestly believe the internal dialogue, the conversation going on in your head is the ego. Not the sense of bravito, but it's the sense of self. And people say, oh, it's a terrible thing because it picks on me. Well, wait a minute. Maybe. Like mine was developed when in my life, if I'd be going along and I do something that got me really embarrassed or made me stand out, and it would go, no, don't do that. And every time it would come to a moment where I was going to stand out, my ego would go, don't, you're going to get hurt. So the sense of identity, the internal dialogue is actually really kind of a nice thing, but it's not effective. It's nice in the way that it's always trying to protect you. The only problem is it protects you by keeping you small. And if you don't want to be small, you have to tell that little internal dialogue, that conversation, thank you for sharing, but I'm going to have to do this anyway. And yes, maybe I'm going to get hurt or maybe I'm going to get embarrassed. In fact, when I was in my late teen years, I used to do stuff on purpose to get embarrassed so I could feel how bad that felt. So I could see that I could survive it in small doses, right? You can like do baby steps with things. So I worked on that for a long time because there was a time I couldn't talk to anyone.
One of the things I love about you is how much internal work you've done. Because in the relationship, we are each responsible for doing our work so that we can show up as a better partner. You and I often joke about this in the sense that when one of us die, the other one is never going to date again. And because it's so much work, oh my God, there's a trend going on right now in social media is that for the people who are really aware and they're single and when they're meeting people online, one of the questions they ask is, are you going to therapy? And I think that's totally fair, because then we're not expecting our partner to fix us. No. Both of us, our parents' relationship, marriage, were not healthy. How did you learn to be in relationship and not repeat what your parents did or didn't do?
So the first thing I learned is to give up everything I thought I knew about relationship and being the relationship I was in. My parents, no. There was no warmth. There was no compassion. There was no kindness. And don't get me wrong, my parents aren't bad people. My dad's a really kind and compassionate person. They just got married really young. My mom was 17 when she had her own boy. My older brother, my dad, she was 19 when she had me. She was, by the time she was 20, 21 she, or 23 she, or 22, she had three little boys running around. She just wasn't equipped. They were vicious with each other. Violence. There was violence in the home and they punished us with violence. One of the good things that can happen in this life, in a sense, is a lot of children become exactly like their parents or the opposite. So I would say I'm a little bit the opposite of my parents, which is good. And I had a lot of really good friends. And I get the idea. I learned more from my friends about caring for my wife. It's easy to learn how to consider somebody else and care about somebody else from your friends if you never learn it from your parents. Then I went through a long self-help period where I learned a lot about how you can't rely on somebody else to make you happy. You need to, if you want to, like coming into a relationship, 50% each is not the way it works. You got to come in 100%. You need to have things there's certain things that you don't deal with in your relationship that you need to deal with outside your relationship. Like your partner can't be the end all be all. They can't be the rock for everything. They can be the rock for some things. And they have the strength and they can do that. And they're in the right place for that. It's okay to lean into them, but you can't like expect that. They'll show you when they can. And when you know that this isn't something that they can help you with, then you got to find outside. Like when my brother took his life, I went to counseling right away. And my brother and I never had a good relationship. And that's kind of a constant with our family. But I was working with people and I needed to make sure I was okay. Because I don't want to go and work with people and not be okay. So I need to make sure my head was in the right place. And recently something else came up and I look at life. I said something about I got into self-help. And have you ever thought about self-help? You're digging, you're peeling away layer after layer after layer after layer, like improving, looking for problems. And guess what? At some point, in the self-help discovery mode, you realize that the more you, every time you solve one problem, there's another one and another one and another one. We're onions. There's layers in relationship. We're onions. If you're going to just sit and look for problems, you're going to find them and you're going to keep on digging into another layer of onion, another layer. There has to come a point when you say, you know, this is good. And I trust that if something needs to be handled, it's going to come up. It's going to be very obvious. And when it does, I'm going to do whatever it takes to deal with that then, so we can go back to this really great place. And that's what recently something came up. And in my life now, I most of the time things are really good. And then suddenly something just floors me and I go, whoa, I have access to something I didn't have access, because it never has anything to do with what's going on in that situation. It has to do with something in your past. This is my opinion, right? I don't know if this is true, but it's something that you didn't have access to. It bubbles up to the surface. You have sudden access. That's the time to take action. That's the time to like working with a therapist. That's to like take a look. When did I feel this before? When is the first time I felt this? Go back. Because if you don't deal with it when it comes up, it's going to go back down and it's going to come up again.
Yeah, that's well said. You know, what you said about peeling the onions, peeling the layers. I agree that you shouldn't go look for troubles, but when things shows up, or if you have never dealt with your stuff and you're getting activated in your relationship, it is time to look at it and to talk to someone about it. How I learned to be in relationship, a lot of it came from you and from couples counseling and from my own therapist. Because I needed to take responsibility for my activation. And I needed to learn that when I am activated by you, it's not you, it's my past experiences. What we said in the beginning, understanding that you're not going anywhere gave me a safe space to do my own healing and to learn to be in relationship with you. And also really knowing that I didn't want our marriage to look like how my parents' marriage was. It wasn't healthy, you know, there was a lot of verbal abuse, mostly from my mom, and I didn't want to be like that. Yeah, I didn't want our marriage to look like my parents, and so I tried to do things differently. How do you know when I am struggling with something? What are the signs?
Nothing to do with snacking. Nothing to do with not sleeping well. I think you tend to be triggered very easily and sometimes about very little things.
I know you're going through stuff when you're not sleeping or when you're quiet. Your avoidant self comes out and then you go back into your turtle shell.
Yeah, I spend time in my cave. The most effective human beings are one of those people who's spent many years in their head. They've dealt up all their stuff and they've really looked at who they are. So yeah, when I get quiet, I am going in my cave and I'm working through something and I'm working hard. And that's when I get quiet. It takes some time.
Yeah, and putting on the therapist's hat, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But if you're somebody who do that, you need to communicate with your partner that that's what you're doing, so your partner can understand what's going on and support you. Especially if your partner is worried that it's something that they've done. You and I have talked about this. I'll go first for this one. Non-negotiables in relationship. Two or three. Mine is infidelity, drugs, and what would you say my third one is?
I am not sure, but I know infidelity and drugs, I get that. Mine is infidelity. Physical violence wouldn't be something that I would be very happy with.
Oh, that's true. Any form of violence or abuse, physical, mentally, verbal abuse, those are non-negotiable because what you and I witness in our parents, right? That's the cycle we don't want to repeat. Oh, you know what? I would say my third one is selfishness.
Yeah, I don't think I have a lot of that. I'm probably swinging way too far to the other side. But you know what? I really believe it's better to err on the side of caution. Like if I'm going to fail in this life, I'm going to fail by being too kind. And if you want to put me in jail for being too kind, too compassionate, too caring, too generous, that's fine because that's who I am.
I would also say one of mine, now that I've done so much internal work, is if you don't protect me in a sense that, because in 2020 with Asian racism, you know, that really triggered my sense of safety. And for me, if you did understand that, that would be really hard for me because my ex, whom we shall not name names, I remember going to watch a movie with him. And this was the start of the end of my relationship with my ex. We saw a movie a few months before my ex and I broke up, and it was about racism. And my ex was a white guy. He said, if anything happened to you and you were harassed by a white cop because of your race, I would not protect you because I don't want to put myself in danger. And I walked away from that interaction going, something is not right here. But at that time, I was still so young, I didn't understand what felt so yucky to me.
Yeah, I think one of the things I said a while ago is like, I think we're talking about white privilege and I was saying like, I do not understand what it's like to be you, to be a minority in a space. My heart is there. I'm compassionate, caring, and supportive, but I will never be able to completely understand because I didn't grow up without white privilege. I have always lived in this, but it doesn't mean I don't care. And it doesn't mean I don't compassionate. It doesn't mean I won't stand there with you and support you. It's just like, I just want to acknowledge that I can never understand it.
Yeah. And I tell people one of the reasons we finally got a dog, even though both of us have wanted to have a dog for so long. And the timing was right. One of the reasons was you said that with the anti-Asian racism hate that was increasing in the last few years, you said that it's good for you to have a dog because then people won't tend to bother you as much. Which I think that kind of backfired in the first 6 months because Bailey is so cute and everybody wanted to say hi and they just come. And boundaries, people, don't touch people's puppies without asking first, is it okay to say hi? I'm just going to put it out there. Do not just go, ooh, so cute, touch the puppy. No, no. Because oftentimes puppies are reacting and new parents are struggling to train the puppy. So boundaries. Saying that though, I think, yeah, it's great because now I don't necessarily make eye contact with people as we walk down the street. As I set better boundaries with not letting babies say hi to everyone and every dog. But it is true, I feel a lot safer having babies.
nobody's the overprotective parent.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I get that.
Anything else you want to share?
I remember once I told you it's something about your ex. I think people should understand this. If you're in a, like, you finally find that relationship that you wanted to be in or whatever, and then you go, I wasted time with this other person or these other people. What I said was, well, I'm just kind of grateful that that person was there holding the space until I could get my head into the right place, until I could work out enough things so I could grow into the man who could be in a relationship. I mean, if you're having trouble with relationships, understand that the person who you're in relationship is either the one or the one holding the place, while the other, the one who's like, you know, coming, holding the place for that person to grow into or clear the stuff out of the way so they can be the person who can be in that relationship with you.
Yeah. And I often say this to clients or friends. Again, if you're in an abusive relationship, please seek help. But I think we learn about ourselves from the relationships. Oftentimes when couples come and see me, if they don't end up staying together, it is not a waste of time because you learn better skills and tools to take to your next relationship. One of the things you said to me a long time ago, maybe it was you, maybe it was someone else, but I think it was you who said to me that oftentimes you're with somebody who is a sane person, that's when your own individual healing happens. Because your partner is sane, that gives you the space to learn and to grow. Because now there is someone there to hold you while you do the difficult work of internal healing.
Yeah, it might have been along the lines of an anchor. If you're in a relationship with somebody who's really solid, that you're anchored so you can go and take a risk to deal with that stuff, but still have your anchor connected to something solid. So you can always pull your way back to it. Row your boat.
Anything else that we want to talk about?
When I get older, losing my hair, many years from now, will you still be sending me a Valentine? But they breathing from the wine.
And with that, my husband likes to sing.
Oh, it's a really good strategy if your internal dialogue is really mean to start singing, because it drowns it out and eventually it becomes a strategy, and then you forget it was a strategy and then you just do it all the time.
To bug your wife, especially before bedtime.
There's a rule in this house, no singing after 6 p.m.
No. But you don't necessarily follow the rules.
Well, you know, rules were meant to be bent, not broken.
Oh, dear. Okay, love you. Bye-bye.
A little more.
We hope you enjoy this episode where we share our relationship, our marriage. And once again, our marriage is not perfect. But when things show up, we deal with it. We work on it. And if we need help, we go outside of this relationship and ask for help and witness from our friends and our therapists.
My sister told me this once many, many years ago. I remember I was visiting her in England. We were on the train and she said to me, who you end up with is important because you have to wake up next to this person for the rest of your life. And I was with my ex at that time. And that really made an impact on me because I knew I wasn't happy with my ex. I hope you find someone who makes you feel loved and that they can hold space for you, take care of you, and you do the same for them. Relationships are hard enough. Do your internal work so you can show up for your partner. Please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review for our podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. This helps others to find the show, and we truly appreciate it. Have a great week, and we'll see you in the next episode.